As somebody who is both an innovator and who works with innovators, one of the things I've been aware of for many years is how people have wildly different relationships to risk. And I think in some ways one could probably make three distinctions here that they're really kind of useful. Some people are just risk averse. Now, that's true of individuals. It's also true of organizations who are frequently concerned about litigation and culpability. So, risk aversion, one dimension. Other people are more able to make some distinctions and engage in risk avoidance, where they're attempting to minimize risk at all costs. And again, as a strategy, true of individuals, true of organizations. But a third way, which I think is somewhat different and often particularly rewarding, especially if you're an entrepreneur or somebody who wants to be engaged in active learning and developing, is risk awareness, which is to have an understanding that there is risk, to be aware of it, but then to use it almost as a means of teaching yourself to be more able to respond appropriately by assessing, well, what is the nature of the risk and assessing it in both a wider context and frequently over time as well. Those two dimensions, so that you don't have a narrow awareness only of what's happening right this minute and are excessively focused to the point where you don't notice what's going on around you, which can be very dangerous, or not aware of the implications of pursuing a particular strategy over time. For instance, let's play safe and keep all our money under the bed. Very risky if you know anything about inflation. So these different ways of coming at something which is part and parcel of being alive, namely the phenomenon that is essentially part of our life experience, risk, has a huge impact on how we function. One of the ways in which it shows up, of course, is that when there is risk, different organizations will handle it in different ways, depending upon their culture, as do different individuals, depending on their mindset. Now, for me, it's been a great pleasure working with entrepreneurial organizations where risk is understood to be part of the territory and you engage with it dynamically, as opposed to living in fear of it. Now, I suppose the most striking example of this for me is some of the work I've been doing more recently with a very entrepreneurial mining company, which has been involved in actively seeking to create an alternative way of dealing with the risk where people can end up being safer in what is a highly dangerous environment often, not by being micromanaged and having lots of rules to follow, but actually by being made more aware of how they can take in a situation and see what are the potential dangers for themselves and their colleagues, and have a much greater what is known as situational awareness. The net result of this approach, which has a number of components to it, is that actually you get fewer accidents. Well, that's nice. Actually, it's more than nice. It's really important if you're in a high-risk industry because it means you get to go home with the same number of limbs that you came to work with in the morning. And I'm not kidding. I've seen the photographs when this has not been the case, and they stay with you. Believe me, they stay with you. So we are doing something here which, to me, is extremely important, but it has some really fascinating side effects. Because in the process of developing this different way of engaging with risk, which is not telling people, there's the safety officer, he/she is going to make sure you're safe, which sounds like, basically delegating a crucial part of self-preservation to somebody else who's in some sort of semi-parental role. Instead of doing that, enabling people to have an awareness themselves, knowing that they have a voice and they can speak up, being able to then drive their own bus has had an impact far beyond just keeping people safe. It causes them to hold themselves and their peers accountable. It actually fosters a more adult way of engaging with the world, and that, of course, in turn means people are empowered. Good Lord. All of this from a rethink of how can we foster greater safety by engaging with risk and using it as a teacher for ourselves. Near my home in Connecticut, there is a very narrow bridge with a sharp right-hand turn. You can only get one car across that bridge with ease. If you were really pushing it and they were not big cars, you might squeeze two. However, there has been talk about widening the road so that it's easier to make that journey. However, there are consequences of so doing which concern me, because at the moment, as you approach, you realize this is a narrow bridge, it's a sharp turn, you necessarily perceive risk. You adjust your behavior accordingly, if you have any sense at all, and I've never seen anybody not adjust their behavior. Now, imagine what happens if you widen the bridge. Suddenly, it looks much more like, oh, an ordinary kind of a place to be, no problem. So your risk awareness may actually be minimized, be reduced, and the net result of that could be you act recklessly because the road has been widened to supposedly make it safer. Ugh, this sort of stuff can do your head in. We actually want the risk to be there to educate us and cause us to adjust our behavior accordingly. At least that's my opinion. Now, another angle on all of this is how this plays out in our culture. In our culture at large, we have an increasing concern about risk and safety, and it shows up as in very odd ways. Let me give you an example. Anybody who's got kids obviously wants to take care of them. However, there is often a fear that they may do themselves some sort of damage, injury, and this can result in a certain kind of overprotectiveness if you're not careful. I see this particularly in the States, and people's perceptions are curious because they're actually skewed. People have concerns about, their child injuring themselves or even dying, what have you, as a result. And they think of like the 50s and all those lovely Norman Rockwell paintings of a safer world where it was easy to allow your kids to cycle to school and so forth. Now, the fact of the matter is that any child under 5 in the 50s was 5 times more likely to die of disease, of an accident, what have you, than the same child would be today. In other words, the 50s were 5 times more dangerous. And the other, of course, great fear, which is only exacerbated by media attention, is that there's some chance of my child being kidnapped or even murdered by some strange person. The realities are totally different. The likelihood of that happening is 1 in 1.5 million. That is just a ridiculously small statistic. It's not barely worth thinking about. It doesn't mean you don't teach your kids to take care of themselves, but they take care of themselves as opposed to living in fear. And so, a whole way of thinking which potentially has huge implications about how we function. Let me give you one final example, which I find absolutely fascinating, because when we're too concerned about protecting people from danger, we paradoxically can end up hurting them in ways we'd never intended. And the extreme example of this is provided by people who are suffering from some degree of dementia, because carers of those with dementia frequently end up trying to protect them from any kind of hazardous situation. And so, at the extreme, they stay permanently indoors because even a walk in the park might, result in them falling over or what have you. What happens if you're overprotected in this fashion? Well, as a clinical psychologist who's he coined the term that people are suffering from a vitamin R deficiency. That would be R as in risk. Because what happens with a lack of risk is you get a lack of stimulation. And if there's a lack of stimulation, the brain suffers a downward spiral, low energy, low self-esteem, even loneliness. And so What would you do about that? Well, you'd have to stimulate people. And so Neil Mapes has actually created an organization, it's a charity called Dementia Adventures, which is providing outdoor activities with an element of risk so that people with some degree of dementia can be stimulated into engaging effectively with their environment again. What are we talking about with risk? Well, we're talking about things like hiking in the Lake District or exploring the canals of the Midlands or going on a 5-day sailing trip along the Cornish coast. It's nothing sort of amazing, but what the model he's using is a really interesting one because it's based on a group of peers taking on responsibility for looking after themselves, along with each person having a carer, as opposed to just having carers who are in this kind of semi-parental role. Net result? People are responding very positively to this, and I think a lot of charities are aware that there is something very significant here because he's being approached by various charities as to, well, how can we do something to ensure that we stimulate people so that we don't end up with what otherwise can happen. We know that walking 40 minutes 3 times a week will boost the parts of the brain that shrink with age and promote the growth of new cells in the brain. We know that. Are we doing anything about it? Are we making sure that people have those kinds of experiences on a regular basis? And we can absolutely do something about it if we allow for the fact that risk actually is not something to be avoided at all costs. It's not something to be frightened of. It's something which stimulates all of our survival mindsets and thus promotes healthy neurological functioning, and at the same time creates a culture of accountability where ultimately people can take responsibility, think of themselves as adults, be empowered, and by so being, be leaders in their own lives. That's not bad for making risk the teacher. Till the next time.